Hi, welcome to the Indie Fantasy Book Club. I'm Kate.
And this is Orland.
And today we are going to be discussing Queen in the Mud by Mari. So, Orland, random question for you. How mad would you be if your mother named you Mud Puppy?
Okay, I'm really torn on that. I'm not sure if I'd be furious or if I would just do my best to live up to the names that she would be furious with herself. It's a hard decision, that one. But in the theme of random questions, I had one for you, which Queen in the Mud inspired. If you were transferred to an RPG world, what beastkin race would you be if you couldn't be a human?
Obviously, I would choose some sort of cat creature.
Would it be like a felinekin?
Like a felinekin, sure, if that's a thing.
I'm sure there's a better word for it.
Werecat?
Ooh, yeah, you could be a werecat. Nine lives and everything. That'd be fun. Anyways, as we promised last week, there would be spoilers. So to kick things off, I'll be giving a brief synopsis of Queen in the Mud. So if you haven't read it yet and don't want me to spoil it for you, please hit pause and do not continue until you have read it. But to dive in, the premise of the story is that we have our main character, Naomi, who wakes up in a black void. She eventually realizes that she's an egg and hatches as a salamander. And the story follows her adventures as she learns and grows and tries to escape death multiple times in this world. Along her journey, she runs into some amazing physics-defying magic, as well as a wise old book. He's quite the character. I enjoyed him very much, but he's certainly got a codgy old man aura to him. She will also find the joys of parenthood after a very short time period, so that was quite exciting, watching her try to take care of people as she's still trying to learn to take care of herself. And towards the end of the book, she has to rise up and use the skills and talents that she's acquired during her escapes from death to save a group of unfortunate slaves. It was quite the powerful ending to the book there. Overall, I would say that I like this book quite a lot. There was a lot of good things, a lot of interesting novel concepts, which I enjoyed reading about. And Kate, what did you think? What was your overall opinion?
I loved it. I really did. I've read this twice now, and the first time reading it through, I believe I read it in two nights. That's because I'm a really slow reader. It was about as fast as I can manage it. What was your favorite bit of the book?
Ooh, that's a great question. So my favorite bit of the book is probably when she discovers Enziris, the anomaly.
Oh, yeah.
So I love the scenery that's laid out there, where like you have these waterfalls cascading from floating islands. Mm-hmm. I really like that imagery and like what it represents to her, right? She just fled for her life, having recently been born. She's been injured. She's very stressed out. But then she comes to this place, which is just magical. And as you see that imagery of like, it not only is it beautiful, but it's a safe haven for her. It's a place for her to grow and to develop and to learn how to survive. And I found that to be quite a touching and impactful moment.
I agree. I thought she did fantastic with the scenery in the entire book. I believe the descriptions were on point, and I felt like I could envision wherever she was. And I think she really lucked out with that magical lake area. It was fantastic.
I do also want to comment that the system messages for the early part of the book, where it constantly referred to how things tasted, was very funny to me.
Not tasty.
Not tasty. Or the blue fishies are the tastiest fishies. I thought that was cute.
Yeah. I would say my favorite part of the book was actually along those same lines, that her internal monologue is funny. There are times when they just laugh at the way she's talking. She's an upbeat character with a quirky sense of humor, and it comes through sometimes. Like, on one of her first days as a salamander, she's getting used to her new body, and she has developed a bit of a mucus layer, and her comment to herself is, well, you just don't talk about a girl's mucus layer.
I like that as well, because it actually comes back at the end of the book, where there's
the slug girl.
With the slug slave, and she says, you know, you just don't ask about a girl's slime layer.
I really enjoyed the voice of the book. Mm-hmm. Which is interesting. We were talking to somebody else who was reading the book, and they wondered if maybe the author wasn't a native English speaker because of the way it was flowing in the tenses. You weren't there?
No. You were there. No. Nope.
Uh-huh.
Don't remember this at all.
I remember this. Anyway, there are some weirdnesses about the tense in the book. It, like, sometimes it's past tense and sometimes it's present tense, but that wasn't a deal breaker for me. Okay, what did you think about the magic system? Believable? Fun?
Different.
Different.
Different, yeah. So the concept of the initial stages of magic made sense. You know, you have to learn how to sense mana and gather mana, whatever, whatever, whatever. I thought it was very interesting where you had, like, mana focuses.
Yeah.
That, like, changed your soul. Or at least that's what it sounded like when I was reading through the book. As you gain those focuses, it, like, shuts off your ability to sense and interact with different magics, which makes sense since, you know, that should be your focus. But at the same time, I felt like it was...
restrictive?
Yeah.
I think it's good to have some restrictions on the magic since she was already becoming really overpowered for her level, I would say. Yeah, I thought it was good to have some restrictions and to kind of dial it back because she does gain a number of interesting abilities I started to lose track of a bit.
I think that's more of a problem with lit RPGs and fantasy to a lesser extent. At least with fantasy, right? Assuming they just don't learn it from a skill book or something, they show that progress and, like, it builds up to these things. I feel with, like, with lit RPGs, it's very easy to get in this, oh, and I got a new ability for my class.
Yeah.
And it's called this. And then the author never uses it. You forget about it. And then when, you know, the character needs a save, oh, by the way. So I do think that's a particular weakness of lit RPGs in specific.
I'd say my favorite mana focus is... well, is it? Okay, I was going to say Luna's. So her daughter...
storm magic?
Yeah, her daughter Luna picks storm magic, which seems very powerful because she can interact with water, lightning, shadow, and wind.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems like she picked a good one. Everybody agrees. What would you say made it different?
So in addition to things we already talked about, I'd say one of the largest things for me was that you don't really have a class, right? So a lot of the things that she gets are defined either by her titles, such as the queen title or the determination title, as well as her race. As far as I can tell, maybe it's just because she's not at a high enough level. As far as I can tell, there's not much of a determination by the class itself. It's just what skills you pick up enables you to do certain things.
Yeah, I would say I have never read a book in which a character has turned into a salamander. This was the first salamanderkin that I've read. And I really liked how the author was able to work in her new body morphology into the way she thought, into the way she fought, and how she used magic, and also how she ended up growing a family. It was different, and it was funny, and I thought the whole thing was actually exciting and enjoyable to read.
I do like at the beginning of the book how she goes in and, like, has to adapt. And we see this adaptation process going from, you know, a human thought process of I run on my back, on my legs, and I go. I don't use my hands to run or I don't use a tail to balance.
Yeah.
So this extra appendage, how she has to learn to use it, I thought that was actually really well done.
Or even she ends up up in a tree at a certain point. And she has to stay there for security reasons, but because she's so far from the water, her skin ends up drying out. And she's like, oh, gotta get back into the mud, gotta get back into the lake. And so that drives her forward progression. I really like how the author seemed to have thought about the various repercussions of being a salamander. And because she's a salamander, and moreover, a royal salamander, she ends up having a little clutch of eggs that just pop out at a certain unexpected moment in the book, and our young friend Naomi ends up as a mother of three. That was different, and I actually really enjoyed watching her with her kids.
Yeah, I would say that actually is one of my reservations about the book, though, because when I was reading through the race descriptions, both her race, which is royal salamanderkin, as well as the race of her children, which are salamanderkin, lay batches, or I guess they're called clutches.
Yeah.
Clutches of eggs every single year to the tune of 1 to 3 for her and 1 to 2 for her children. I mean, talking about exponential growth rates, that's a lot of people. And so
might get eaten, though.
You heartless person.
I'm just saying.
That would break her heart.
No.
She would cry.
In the description of salamanderkin, their tails are delicious and people
That's not salamanderkin.
Royal salamanderkin?
No, no, that's for the
salamanders. Greater salamanders.
Greater Lake salamanders.
Oops.
They're the ones with tasty tails. Although I'm sure the salamander kin tails also are tasty as well. Not that you should eat sapient creatures.
Yeah, because they're talking to you, you'd feel bad.
At least you should.
You should.
Anyways, as I was saying, that's one of my main reservations is moving forward into book two. How is the author going to manage all these people, right? Because she's already building this really close relationship between Naomi, the main character, and her children. So how is she going to be able to keep up that relationship? Or is it just going to be the first three who have a really close relationship and just every clutch after that just gets more and more distant?
I'd imagine that is one way she could deal with it. Or she could pick out like one or two important sort of salamanderkin that end up distinguishing themselves in some way so that we can remember them. But I would agree with you that the increase in population is a struggle, especially for the reader. Maybe it wouldn't be so bad if it was a movie, actually, because then we could see them and would not have to be introduced line by line. But
have you seen Cheaper by the Dozen? It's hard to keep track of everybody. Maybe that's just me. But when I'm watching that movie, I'm like, where did they go? They're part of this family?
That's how the parents feel, too, actually. So, yeah, I'd say that the weakest part of the book for me was the very, very end, which is kind of sad because the climactic battle that she has is really exciting. She lures a huge snake, one that she had a trouble running away from in the very beginning, and she fights it to the death with some help from some friends and other extenuating circumstances. Oh, the blood ring was fantastic. I thought a blood ring ending up inside of a snake and like emaciating it was so fun, and turning it into a flaming snake at that. It was a lot of great imagery. So she faces the giant snake, she faces the slavers, she faces death and has to save her daughter. It was all very exciting. And I loved it. And in it, she gets severely injured, which I liked too, because it showed that she had to pay the price for her victory. She earned it. It felt like she earned it. But then everything just slows down to a point where it feels like she's just running the soup kitchen on this floating island full of refugees. Yeah, and she's while it would be smart in real life to delegate a lot of responsibilities because she's delegating so much as a protagonist, she's not actively doing stuff. She's more like, you should go get the supplies from the supply chain.
No. She wanted to go.
She was broken.
Her child and Thaddeus made her not go.
She was hobbling.
They did it because they cared.
The problem remains that she becomes less active in the last chapters, and so it just slows it down. With that, we have a whole caravan of refugees. We don't get hardly any names. I believe we get one name. Yeah, we get one name, and the rest of them are just kind of described as what they look like. And it just gave me stress, actually, thinking about all the different tactical problems they're going to have. Getting people who can't fly onto floating islands and getting food up there. And they don't have houses. And I was like, oh, boy.
I do agree with your points. I would say that the fact that she was heavily injured and couldn't move would be a big rationale behind what was happening, but I do agree. So, Kate, after expressing that reservation, how do you feel about reading book two when it comes out?
I would 100% read book two. We didn't even talk about the time traveling guy. We didn't talk about death or the other pillars because there's a lot of ominous things in the book.
Yeah.
Maybe we should just leave that for the readers. Did you like the ominous things?
I did. I think ultimately that would be one of the major pushes to reading book two. I honestly think there's a lot going on between Naomi and the pillars.
She might be a pillar.
Yeah, she might be the reincarnation of a pillar, which is a very interesting concept. But I feel like the idea of the pillars is not really fleshed out enough.
Yeah.
For me to really understand what's going on. So that's why I didn't want to comment on them too much right now, because I don't feel like I have a good enough understanding to convey my thoughts on them accurately.
That's fair.
I'm hoping book two will flush it out more and really help us understand what's going on right now. I feel like we just have that foreshadowing.
It's a mystery I don't know if I want the answer to. Weirdly, whenever death showed up, or whenever the pillar of time showed up and he was a jerk,
I wouldn't call him a jerk. I would call him a kooky man.
No, he said, if I see you again, I'll kill you.
Okay, I see your point.
Anybody who threatens to murder you on sight is a jerk. I'll stand by that.
Okay.
So, yeah, I don't like the pillars, and the relationships are kind of scary. And I was just like, why don't we just go back to our island and fish? But I'm willing to follow it through and see what the system has in store for her. 100% would read book two. Good job, Mari. We enjoyed reading your book immensely. Thank you for the hours of salamander fun.
Indeed. For our next episode, we'll be reading Atlas Rising by Blake Severson. Kate, you've already started reading that. Do you want to give us a little teaser? A little teaser.
Okay. I want to start with a disclaimer. The grammar in this book is not fantastic.
Yeah, you see, this is why we have you read the books as well, because you care about the grammar.
Orlin can edit things in his head. He has literally quoted things to me in good grammar, things that were written in bad grammar. He did not notice. So Orlin read this book.
It's like an autocorrect in my mind going all the time. I don't even have to think about it now. It just goes.
That's kind of cool. So
not great for book recommendations.
Not great for book recommendations. You have to take what he says with a grain of salt.
And well, the story's there. As long as you can look
past it. Yeah. So Atlas Rising, Blake, you might need to hire an editor, but the story is great. The character is interesting, and the setting is totally different from Queen in the Mud, so we thought it would be a good pivot point for us. Instead of a portal fantasy in which you turn into a salamander, this is a human goes into a VR world as a player character, as far as I can tell. I'm only 20% in so far, but I enjoy the mystery, and I think we'll have a lot to talk about. Something is happening under the surface. It's gotta be. And if not, is something happening under the surface?
We'll definitely talk about the stakes next time. We strongly encourage you, if you don't like spoilers, to read the book. You can find it on Kindle. Anyways, everyone, thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Indie Fantasy Book Club. Please recommend us to any of your friends who are interested in indie fantasies or indie lit RPG. We know the first couple episodes are going to be lit RPG, but don't worry. Those of you who are more mainstream fantasy fans, we'll be bringing that around the corner just in a couple weeks.
We appreciate everybody who listens and gives us a review. It helps other people find us, and it just warms our little hearts every time you give us a star or two. Or, you know, if you're feeling generous, you could give us 5 stars.
I think that's a bit shameless of a plug, dear.
Too shameless?
Just shameless enough.
All right. Thank you so much for listening. See you next week.
Bye.